is about the construction of Solomon's temple. It begins that study, and there are going to be three parts to that. Today we will talk about preparing to build the temple, and then in the next two times that I'm scheduled to speak this month, we will talk about the actual construction project on the temple, and finally on look at the dedication of the temple. The preparation for the temple, building the temple, begins with David's desire to build a house for God. That was the text that I had Brother Gary read for our Bible reading this morning. So that's the obvious beginning point of our lesson on the preparation for the temple. And so the first thing we notice is that David had this desire. And that became clear in the reading. David desires to build a house for God's name. And by that, basically, he meant a house in which to house the Ark of the Covenant. Up until that point, the Ark of the Covenant had resided in the holiest of holies in the tabernacle, which was a tent. There's some discussion among scholars about whether it was the original tabernacle that was built by Moses and that it had lasted all of that time, or whether at some point it had been refurbished or rebuilt. But the passage makes it very clear that the tabernacle was the place where the Ark of the Covenant, and thus in the way of the Hebrew language, God said he dwelt there. Well, David had solidified his control of the kingdom. When Saul had been killed in battle with the Philistines, the southern tribe of Judah, which was where David was from, he was of the tribe of Judah, immediately said, "You will be our king." And he ruled from Hebron for 7 years. And it was only after that period that there was some political manipulation and some civil war, actually, that ultimately brought all the rest of the 12 tribes under David's solidified rule. During that time, David defeated the Canaanite city of Jebus and renamed it Jerusalem. And there, that's where he built his palace, and that's where he built, it said he erected a tent for the Ark of the Covenant when it was recovered from the Philistines. And so whether that meant he had the tent moved from Shiloh of the original tabernacle or refurbished it, that's what the discussion is about. But as it was, that's where the Ark of the Covenant was kept. And so his residence has been built. He's built a nice palace. And David sees what we in today's terminology call a disconnect. He says, here I am ruling over the kingdom. I have built a palace of cedar, which would have been the gold standard in that day, using the cedar from the cedar trees in Lebanon. And he said, I've got a luxurious house, and God's ark is still sitting in a tent. So I think that I should build this house. And so God reveals that to Nathan, who is one of the prophets that served him during his rule. And Nathan, the prophet, understands the implications of that, that David is wanting to build a permanent place for the ark to reside. And so he basically tells him that, well, whatever is on your mind to do, you do it. But then we find that Nathan actually spoke on his own, because that night God says, no, that's not the plan. That's not what I'm going to allow. And so he informs Nathan to tell David that he is not the one that is going to build a permanent house for him in Jerusalem. And God makes the point, really, that he had dwelt in the tabernacle, which was built by Moses, as God had ordered it to build. and that he had never really expressed a desire for anything else. The only thing God had told them, if you go back and look through the five books of the law of Moses, was that he would appoint a place once they entered the land, the promised land, that he would appoint a place for them. And there's a number of passages that talk about this, particularly in Deuteronomy 12. But for sake of time, I'm only going to read a couple verses, Deuteronomy 12, verses 5, 6, and 7. But you shall seek the Lord at the place which the Lord your God will choose from all your tribes, to establish his name there for his dwelling. And there you shall come, and there you shall bring your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the contribution of your hand, your votive offerings, your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herd and your flock. There also you and your household shall eat before the Lord your God, and rejoice in all your undertakings in which the Lord your God has blessed you. Now there are several other passages in Deuteronomy 12 that reiterate this. At this point, all he has told them is, I will tell you where to come and worship me. And originally that was in Shiloh. When Samuel was the judge, we find the tabernacle was in Shiloh. Now, one of the things that you often hear about this is that David was not permitted to build the temple because he was a man of war and had fought many battles and so forth. If you notice, that's not communicated in 2 Samuel 7. It's just, he's not going to build my house. It is Solomon that tells us that that's the reason over in 1 Kings 5 and verse 2, when he talks about building the temple, he says, my father wanted to do it, but God would not allow it because of his warfare. And so we know that's at least one of the reasons why God chose for David not to build the temple. So in 2 Samuel 7 and verse 12, God promises David that he will be given a son who will build the temple. And this is prophetic, and it's the way prophecies happen in the Old Testament. It's the idea that oftentimes things that happen in the Old Testament foreshadow a more significant spiritual fulfillment later on. And so in 2 Samuel 7 and verse 12, it says, when your days are complete and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your descendant after you, who will come forth from you, and I will establish his kingdom. And he shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. And so David is told, you're not going to build this house. Your son will build this house, which is true because Solomon builds it. But we also know, looking centuries into the future, when Jesus is born in Bethlehem as a descendant of David, that the New Testament inspired writers point back to this 2 Samuel 7 passage and say, while Solomon was the immediate fulfillment of this, God was really looking towards the time when he would establish his spiritual kingdom under a descendant of David, and that would be the coming of the Messiah. And that idea did not originate with the apostles. That's not an appropriation of Old Testament prophecy. The Jews firmly believed that ultimately that kingdom was coming. They had a messianic expectation. I think the key thing about this in terms of our study and as far as David is concerned is how he accepts this message. Because so often if we want to do something and somebody tells us, no, we can't do that, we get upset, we may pout a little bit, we may get angry. Some people just quit because they don't get what they wanted. Well, that's not the way David acted. Immediately upon David receiving this message, you're not going to build this temple, this house for my name, That's your son will do that. David prays to God, and in that prayer, he says in 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 21, for the sake of your word, and according to your own heart, you have done all this greatness to let your servant know. For this reason you are great, O Lord, for there is none like you, and there is no God beside you, according to all that we have heard with our ears. And so instead of getting angry about it, David praises God for giving him the message that while he's not going to be allowed to build the temple, that his son will build that temple. So how does David react at that point? Well, what David does is in the rest of his life, he makes preparation so that the temple can be built after he dies when his son takes the throne. In 1 Chronicles chapter 22 and verse 2, David gave orders to gather the foreigners who were in the land of Israel, and to set stone cutters and to hew out stones to build the house of God. And David prepared large quantities of iron to make the nails for the doors of the gates and for the clamps, and more bronze than could be weighed, and timbers of cedar logs beyond number, for the Sidonians and Tyrians brought large quantities of cedar timber to David. And David said, my son Solomon is young and inexperienced, and the house that is to be built for the Lord shall be exceedingly magnificent, famous and glorious throughout all lands. Therefore now I will make preparation for it. So David made ample preparation before his death. So David does what he can do, and using his authority as king, making treaties with the kings of Tyre and Sidon, he begins assembling the building materials that Solomon will need once the work of the temple is actually started. He planned for all the necessary importing of materials as well as workers so that all of that was ready. So then we come to the time when Solomon actually completes the preparation, gets all things ready to build this temple. And so he follows up upon what his father has done, and he contracts with Hiram, who is the king of Sidon. And this is described in 1 Kings chapter 5, verse 7. When Hiram heard the words of Solomon, he rejoiced greatly and said, blessed be the Lord today who has given to David a wise son over this great people. So Hiram sent word to Solomon saying, I have heard the message which you have sent me. I will do what you desire concerning the cedar and cypress timber. My servants will bring them down from Lebanon to the sea, and I will make them into rafts to go by the sea to the place where you direct me, and I will have them broken up there, and you shall carry them away. Then you shall accomplish my desires by giving food to my household. So Hiram gave Solomon as much as he desired of the cedar and cypress timber. And Solomon then gave Hiram 20,000 cores of wheat as food for his household and 20 cores of beaten oil. Thus Solomon would give Hiram year by year. So this is an annual payment for the lumber. And the Lord gave wisdom to Solomon, just as he promised him, and there was peace between Hiram and Solomon, and the two of them made a covenant. So a core was both a dry measure and a liquid measure. The dry measure was equal to about, I think, 10 bushels of grain. And you notice he's giving him 20,000 cores, about 200 bushels of grain a year. The liquid measure was several gallons. There's some question about how much it actually was. But again, a good bit of oil, and that would have been olive oil probably. And so the actual mechanics was that Hiram's workers would cut the trees on the mountains of Lebanon and hew them into logs, transport them down to the Mediterranean Sea, make them into rafts, float them down the coast to where Solomon wanted them. Then they would be disassembled and carried by hand up the mountains to the mountain upon which Jerusalem sat. So you just think about the man hours involved in moving that much material. So the materials are supplied. Then he selects an overseer, and he tells Hiram he needs someone to oversee the project. So in 2 Chronicles chapter 2 and verse 13, it says, "Now I'm sending Huram Abi, a skilled man endowed with understanding, the son of a Danite woman and a Tyranian father, who knows how to work in gold, silver, bronze, iron, stone, and wood, and in purple, violet, linen, and crimson fabrics, and who knows how to make all kinds of engravings and to execute any design which may be assigned to him, to work with your skilled men and with those of my Lord David, your father." And so he's usually called Huram in most English translations of the Bible. He is half Jewish, half Phoenician. But if you notice, he has all of the skills necessary. So he's going to oversee all the skilled labor to build the temple. And then the final thing is Solomon arranges for the actual workforce. In 1 Kings chapter 5 and verse 13, "Now King Solomon levied forced laborers from all Israel." So you notice they were not volunteers. They were conscripted and pressed into the service of the king, numbering 30,000 men. And he sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month in relays. So this principle of Solomon, by the way, is used even today, that they would work one segment of time and then rest two. Professional firefighters, and I don't know that we've ever had anybody at West Carrollton that worked as a professional firefighter, other than Brother Hurst, who preceded me as a preacher, was a captain in the Louisville Fire Department, I remember. But firefighters work 24 hours on and 48 hours off. And that pattern is followed in a lot of things, people being sent overseas for work and temporary work and things like that. And as far as we know, that idea originated with Solomon. So he had these 30,000 workers, but they worked in groups of 10,000. They would spend a month up in the forests of Lebanon and then 2 months at home. And so that's how he had it. He appointed Adoram over the forced laborers. Now, that's just to deal with the logs, because you go down to verse 15. He had 70,000 transporters. That's people to carry the logs. 80,000 hewers of stone out working in the quarries, making the stones that would be used. And 3,300 chief deputies, foremen, overseers for the work, who ruled over the people who were doing the work. And so then the king commanded, verse 17, "And they quarried great stones, costly stones, to lay the foundation of the house with cut stones. So Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders and the Gebalites cut them and prepared the timbers and the stones to build the house." So what we see here is the sheer number of the workers, the size of the annual payments to Hiram. They give us an indication of what a massive project this would be. And it would take years to actually build this once they started trying to assemble it on Mount Zion. So all the preparations are complete. And in the next lesson, we'll take a look at how the Bible actually describes the actual building of the temple. And so Brother Cliff has the prayer, and then we'll be dismissed to our Bible.
Father, we thank you for another day, seeing us through the night. We might assemble on your Son's Day, another Son's Day.